Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our council meeting. It is October 26, 6 p.m., and I am calling this meeting to order. Will you please stand with me to say the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we'll go through the roll call. Councilman Owen?
Here.
Thank you. Councilman McGoffin?
Present.
Thank you. Councilwoman Diamond?
Present.
Councilman Burns?
Present.
Councilwoman Kestie?
Present.
Councilman Allen?
Present.
And Councilman Lavaca?
Present.
Excellent. Thank you. Welcome, everyone. We're going to move forward with approval of the agenda. Before we do, we need to pull Resolution 1103-22. This was in honoring Paula Kelly, but she has requested that we change it to a different evening, so we're going to do that. We're going to honor that request by her. So when you make an approval of the agenda, please stipulate that we are pulling Resolution 1103-22. Do I have a motion?
I'd like to make a motion to approve the agenda, but pulling 1103-22.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you. Moving on to the consent agenda, items 1-4. Do I have a motion?
I'll make that motion.
Thank you.
Madam Mayor, I'll second that.
Thank you. So I have a motion by Councilman Owen, second by Councilman Diamond. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. All right, thank you. Moving on to the city administrator's report. Good evening, Charlie.
Thank you, Mayor Johnson and Council. Just one item this evening, and I'm going to turn it over to Finance Director Kelly Kofkin to cover it.
Good evening. We are beginning our state audit, and at the beginning of each audit, after their planning procedures, they provide documentation to the full council about what will be covered in the audit. And at that point, we can also hold a formal entrance conference. I don't believe a formal entrance conference is necessary. I think management, at least, is pretty well versed in the audit process. You get all the documentation. But if any of you would like to have that formal entrance conference, we're open to that and can make that happen.
All right. Thank you. Are there any questions for Kelly? Okay, hearing none. Charlie, do you have? All right. Thank you. And I know, Chief McElwraith, you said you had something you'd like to share.
Yeah, I just wanted to share. Cedarwood Rise is partnering with Schaffner Pharmacy, WIC, Skagit County Public Health. We're doing Drug Take Back Day here in front of the Cedar Valley Police Department, and we're having some booths inside for resources and such. So if you have any medications that you want to get rid of, unused prescription medications, please drop them off so they don't get into the wrong hands. I think that's pretty much the goal, to make this a safe community where kids and stuff don't have access to medications. Then I want to also mention Cedar Valley Rise is also having the first ever sponsoring and with the Cedar Valley School District, the Family University. That's just what we're doing there is 8 must-have conversations to have with your kids about drugs and alcohol. So feel free to join us. Very important to get the messages out. There's a panel of people on there, including myself, that want to share an important message. Thank you very much.
All right. Date and time and location, do you have that, Chief?
Yes, for Drug Take Back Day, that's this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And for Family University, it is November 3rd. And that is 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Cedar Valley Library. Cedar Valley High School Library.
All right. Thank you very much. All right, moving on to council reports. Councilman Owen, a report.
I don't have anything. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Councilman McGoffin?
Hi. Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just have one item this evening. We received word that Skagit County is going to start on construction for the pedestrian crossing to Janicki Fields. It's scheduled to start October 31st in the last 2 weeks. This is something we've been talking about, so I'm excited to see it come to fruition. Thank you.
Councilman Diamond?
Good evening. I just wanted to report that we did have a utilities committee meeting this evening where we reviewed the budget of the 3 major services here in town. So we were reviewing and discussing budgets, talking about the services that the city needs to have to maintain and provide for our community. So those discussions are being had, and just so that everybody's aware.
All right. Thank you. Councilman Burns.
Nothing this evening, Madam Mayor.
All right. Thank you. Councilwoman Kesty?
Nothing this evening.
All right. Thank you. Councilman Allen?
It's good to be back, actually. I will be at the meeting on Wednesday the 2nd, right?
Perfect. Yes.
Okay. Then I'm going to be in Mexico from the 5th to the 19th. So I'll do my best and take my tablet down and see what we can do down there. But I will be back for the 2nd meeting for sure, and with a little luck from God, back the 1st meeting too. So,
excellent.
Thank you.
Good to see you back, Glenn. And Councilman Lavaca.
Thank you. I just wanted to say thank you to Chief Dan and the police force for all you guys do, and you've been very busy out there, and we are very thankful for that. Thank you.
All right, and I just have a couple items. One is that we have an opening for the planning commissioner position. We have a planning commissioner who is going to be stepping down, has fulfilled her term. And if anyone is interested or know of anyone who might be interested, please have them submit a 1-page letter of interest by the 22nd of November. And that is to the Cedar Valley Planning Department, Attention Planning Director, 325 Metcalf Street in Cedar Valley. And the other item is, so as you probably know, we have City Scene Magazine. We do not have the hard copy anymore, but we have been putting it on our Facebook, and they are looking for stories. Jana, who does the editing for us, is looking for anybody who may have a story that they would like to share. So if there's something that you would like to share or submit, Jana would be the person to contact, and she's always looking for good material. So encourage you all to do that. All right, that is it. It is now 6:08, and I will open it up for public comments. The public is invited to come up and give about a 3-minute talk if they like. Please give your name and your address, and I'll leave it at that. Is there anybody in the audience? I'll begin with the audience who may be interested in giving public comment.
Philip Murray, 101 West Woodworth.
I'm not sure what you're doing with the budget, but I'm asking you not to raise any taxes. Nobody knows what they're going to be used for, how much or anything, and people can't afford you to keep raising everything, utilities and everything. It's ridiculous. And then the other thing was you had board meeting on utilities or something. Is that right, Sarah? Is that what you mentioned?
We have committee meetings.
Committee meetings. Mm-hmm. Was that open to the public?
No.
It's not open to the public. It should be. No. Public needs to know what goes on in our town, and they need to be posted, either online and at least in your entryway. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Anybody else? All right. I will ask online. Is there anybody online? If you can raise your hand or unmic. All right. I don't see anybody. It is now 6:09, and I will close public comment, and we'll move right into public hearing. The first hearing is on the preliminary 2023-2024 budget and budget message. This is actually a second public hearing. I'm going to turn this over to our finance director, Kelly Kokin, and she is going to lead us through this. So, Kelly.
Charlie's going to give a brief overview first.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay, I just wanted to call the council's attention to the budget message, which we distributed tonight. We've been working hard on this budget, trying to get the last pieces in place, and so you've got it there at the dais. We're going to add it as additional materials on the website as well to go with this meeting. So with that said, I just wanted to quickly walk you through it. We talk about the council goals a little bit. We talk quite a bit about our accomplishments for 2022, all the way down onto the second page, and I won't get into those right now. You can all read them and check them out, but I did want to highlight the 23-24 highlights section of the budget. As you can see, we've got Olmsted Park in there. We're aiming for through phase two. We've got through phase one fully funded, and we're working on some additional ARPA funding for getting through phase two of that, and then possibly an RCO grant to look at funding and completing phase three, but we'll need some help to get there from the state on that one. Memorial Park slated for construction. The comprehensive plan gets started in 2024. I wanted to give Chief McElwraith a quick moment to talk about Axon auto tagging.
Just real quick, auto tagging a service that's provided through evidence.com Axon for our body cams. So what we have to do kind of right now, whenever we record a video, we have lots and lots of videos that we record on contacts. We have to come back to our office and find the case number associated with that and enter that in there to label it for records. What this system does is a small cost, around $2,400 a year. It matches up with our Spillman system and figures out when the cameras are on associated with the case number assigned and kind of auto labels that for us. So it's going to take, free up more time for officers to do reports and be out patrolling and such like that and not do a tedious task of labeling videos. So I'm in support of that, and so are patrol.
Thank you, Chief. We're going to demolish the current wastewater office and work on restoring the anoxic tank at wastewater at the plant. We have economic development investments in there with ARPA. We're going to continue the fire department academies. Chief, I don't know if you want to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, we are very, very thankful for your support with the ARPA funds this past year. With our continued issues with staffing and not being able to fill some of these positions due to our aftermath of all the retirements in the region and the open positions that we've talked about. I think I've been preaching this for a couple years now, unfortunately. But with that, these recruit academies that we didn't have access to this last year, we're on our second one right now. They're over here in the training room as we speak. We only have three folks in there right now, but it has been very beneficial. Sometimes it feels like we're going one step forward and a few steps back because as we're training them, other ones are leaving. We've just found out that we have one getting ready to go into the military, one getting married, and one moving out and becoming an adult and getting their own place. So life happens. We got to celebrate these successes as we watch these kids grow. But with that, these recruit academies, we're getting a good success, and some of the folks that are staying around are really contributing and making our volunteer folks that much better, and Amanda and Jerry are doing a phenomenal job, and this is going to help us going forward. So thank you.
Thank you, Chief. And along the lines of discussing academies, we also have a Cedra Woolley Academy that we're working on. It's a resident academy that would be available to members of the public who want to learn more about the city. It would run roughly 8 weeks. We had an intern working on helping us scope it this summer. These types of academies are done in other communities, and they're a really good way to help bring people up to speed on how the city works and then help to fill positions like boards and commission positions as people get more up to speed on how the city works. They're better able to plug in. So it's something that we can offer with our department directors, essentially doing a lot of the instruction. We'd involve the mayor and at least one or several members of the council as well in that. And so just wanted to highlight that for you. It's a very low-cost effort, but we are looking at just grabbing a tiny bit of ARPA funds to try to execute that. But worst case, we could absorb that cost, I think, in the city's budget. There's also an update of the city's website, which ties directly to the discussions council's had with strategic planning and trying to highlight our parks better and just better organizing the information that's out there. And there's a lot more in here. I just wanted to pick a few things out this evening. Moving on down to the general fund, we had quite a lift in cutting things out of the general fund to get to this point, about $500,000 in 2023 and another $600,000 in 2024. Big driver of that is inflation. We're seeing inflation across a lot of our line items, and our city revenues just aren't growing at the pace of inflation. So that was a tough exercise, but we've gotten to this point. It was about $1.1 million that we removed for the biennium. So great job by staff. It was a collaborative team effort. We literally went through every line item in the budget and actually multiple times looking for ways to save money and ways to be more efficient, and that's where we ended up. With this budget, and we've preserved the services that the city has offered and up through this point and will continue to offer going forward. The Parks Fund, you're going to hear more about that from Kelly, so I won't get into that too much, but the Parks Fund has some funding issues, and so we're doing a number of things to address those. Fund balances and reserves, besides the Parks and Facilities Fund, we're in good shape. We're meeting our council policies for how much money we should be carrying forward from year to year. In those areas, personnel, we've highlighted position shifts and changes. A lot of it's planning for retirements in this biennium coming up, but we do have some new positions as well that are mainly related to increasing workload in the city and some of the growth we've experienced. Utilities, we didn't really touch that in the budget message, but you're going to hear more about utilities, particularly next time, and the Utilities Committee got a preview of that tonight, talking about rates and what's going on in the utilities. We're meeting all of our debt service obligations, and for you as a council, there are key policy decisions, and this gets down to the last page of the budget message to consider as we move forward. Of course, the property tax is always a topic of discussion this time of year, so that is something we'll need your guidance on. We have made some assumptions the way we've built this budget, and I'll leave that to Kelly to get into more a little bit later. We'll need direction on rates as well, and my apologies, it should not say proposed water and sewer rates down there, but just proposed rate changes for 2023. And then proposed capital projects as well. So we've got a number of projects in here, and if the council wants to make some changes in those areas, certainly you can let us know that. I just wanted to very much at the end here, on behalf of the mayor and the whole team, just thank all of our staff for the work that went into this. Every single staff member is involved in the budget process. And that rolls all the way up to our senior management team, who then did a lot of the heavy lifting. But in the middle of it all, with about 5 months of experience, is our new finance director, Kelly Kofkin, who did a great job getting us to this point. And I want to thank Mayor Johnson as well for her trust in this whole process for us to get to this point. And now we're excited to work with all of you on trying to make sure that we dial this in the way it needs to be for the community going forward. So with that, I want to turn it over to Kelly, and she's going to walk us through in more detail the funds of the budget. The council approves the budget at the fund level, so that's really what you want to be thinking about looking at these funds. Are they balancing out correctly? Do you like how they look? So we'll get into that more in terms of the detail here with Kelly.
Thank you, Charlie. In the packet are all of the slides, as well as Bill has them up on the screen as well. So we're talking about the 23-24 budget. Just to quickly go over some objectives of this, really this meeting is just to present the budget as is. It's our second public hearing on the budget and then the first read of the property tax ordinance. Bill, can you go to the next slide? And the, really the main focus is to answer any questions you may have. We may not be able to answer them immediately, but are committed to taking back and answering all of them to the best of our ability in upcoming meetings. Next steps after this meeting today, the next meeting is a work session on November 2nd. We'll present that budget message again, answer those outstanding questions, and then present any revisions we may have between now and then. Later in November, hope to have a second read on property tax and then discuss any remaining policy decisions and hopefully pass the budget. First thing I want to talk about is the general fund. So here is just a quick snippet summary of the general fund. These numbers changed just slightly from what's included in the packet. We had a change in the library fund. We just got some new information, so wanted to make those changes here. You can see between the 2 years, we have a net gain in the general fund of $8,411. That's about 0.04% of those 2 years total expenditures. So it's a pretty tight budget. It doesn't leave a lot of room for growing any of our reserves. And if there's any major swings, or incidences that don't come with an associated revenue source, our general fund will have a loss for those years. Wanted to point out a couple of highlights in this fund. We are using $306,000 and $291,000 of ARPA money, and we'll talk about ARPA on a later slide. We're also subsidizing the park fund $90,000 each year, so a transfer from the general fund to the parks fund each year. And again, like I said, we just made some slight revisions also to the library fund, which impacts the general fund. Next fund I want to highlight is the American Rescue Plan Act. So that's what we refer to as ARPA. The city received approximately $3.4 million in ARPA money. This is federal money. In 2021 and 2022, and you can see I just gave a quick breakdown of how we're spending that money. We haven't spent much of it yet. We spent about $146,000 in 2021, plan to spend about $60,000 this year. And then next year in 2023 is where we're going to spend the bulk of the money. And you can see the bullet points here are some of the key elements, not everything, but the key elements we're going to spend it on. The biggest one is the completion of Olmsted Park through Phase 2 and Memorial Park. That's the biggest use of our ARPA money, as well as economic development. You know, we heard Chief already talk about the continuation of the Fire Department Academy and tuition reimbursement, and then some organization development. We're not getting any more ARPA money, so once this money is spent down, it's gone. There's no more money flowing into this account. So you'll see in the big packet the numbers going negative, and that's on purpose. We're just expending money in these next 2 years out of that fund.
And just to point out, we need to spend the money. It's federal money, and we have a limitation on it. We have to spend it by the end of 2026. We have to have a plan for how we're going to spend it by the end of 2024, but we're well on our way to getting through it at this point.
The Council Strategic Reserve, this is money set aside to meet the Council's objectives. Historically, that has been funded by a utility tax on water. So money we get in from Skagit PUD and them taxing their customer base. That fund has built up quite a bit. You can see the fund balance on the slide as of today. We're proposing a change in the funding into that fund. 50% of that utility tax we've now put into the general fund. So the money that was going in, a portion of that will now go into the general fund to maintain our operations. Historically, we've also made a $50,000 additional loan payment on our debt for City Hall to pay off that quicker and reduce our interest expenditures for that debt. We've also built in 23-24 some subsidies to the Parks Fund, $38,000 and $51,000 in 2023 and 2024. And you'll see here between the 2 years, we are there will be a loss in that fund, but the fund balance is sufficient to cover that. Next, just really quickly going over the utility funds. We'll be talking about this in depth at the work session. There'll probably be some changes between now and then, just making some adjustments. But some highlights for our utilities, we do have some new positions. The first one isn't a new position, but filling a vacancy in our wastewater treatment plant. For solid waste, adding another driver to meet the demand for that service. Also hiring an assistant city engineer that will be working a lot with the sewer fund. And then hiring another staff person who will work 50% parks and 50% sewer. As Councilwoman Diamond pointed out, there was a utility committee meeting just before this meeting where we went over some of this, some of the information in more detail, which will get shared with more detail at the work session. So more information to come.
And just in a response to that, the study guide that was discussed is actually online and was posted online prior to the meeting.
Next one we want to talk about is the Parks Fund. So you can see here, over the 2 years, there's a net gain in that fund of about $1,500. And in that fund, we have the completion of Olmsted Park, again, through Phase 2 and Memorial Park. However, there's a lot of money going into the Parks Fund. We have money from ARPA to fund those two projects. And like I already mentioned, have money subsidizing the Parks Fund from the Council Strategic Reserve, as well as the General Fund. And again, hitting the Fund 2 is the new position to maintain our existing parks. Okay, that was a lot of talking on my end, but now just open for any questions you may have. What we'll go into to next is our property tax recommendations. So, any questions about any of the items I went over so far or anything else in the budget?
Should we make this two different public hearings? Because we do need to open this up to the public to allow them to make comment as well. And then we'll bring it back to the council to ask questions and have discussion.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So if you have completed your piece. Okay, then I will open this up to the public and allow them to come forward and make any comments if they wish to on the 2023-2024 budget and budget message. So is there anybody within the audience who would like to do that? Okay. Hearing none, then we will open it up to the council. Does the council have any questions or discussions that you would like to have over this? Councilman Lavaca.
Thank you. Charlie, the Academy Department of Education kind of set up that you were going to do for the citizens. That's really cool. Is that something that you think would happen in 2023 or?
Yes, we're looking at starting advertising for it in January of 2023, and it would run a couple of months once we got started. We'd probably get started mid February, the latest late February, and then be done.
And anybody could do that that's in Cedar Woolley?
Yeah, we'll have to set some parameters on it, but generally the intent is certainly the folks within our community.
Right. Councilwoman Kesty?
And how much were you planning on budgeting for that?
We had just a small amount for that. It's something like $2,000 a year. And it's really just for materials that we may need for the actual program. So it's very, very low cost because we're using our own staff. Each one of us essentially will have a night we're responsible for planning the presentation. So, for example, we might do a public safety night. I don't know. We might put both chiefs together, but probably not. We'd probably split them out. And we want to get as hands-on as possible. So folks might get into the fire department and see some of the apparatus in addition to learning all about how the fire department functions.
So it's something where it's like a job follow?
The general format is they would meet essentially one night a week for about 8 weeks. So they would start week one would probably be a high-level discussion with like myself, the mayor, possibly one of the council members talking about those roles and relationships and how we work together. Week two might be public works with Mark and staff there. And so part of it's going to be providing information. This is how the department works. This is what we do. This is how we're funded. But we also want to do some hands-on stuff. So I've done this kind of program in another community, and one thing we did is we did a role play, actually, the night that we talked about roles and responsibilities with the council and the city administrator and the mayor. We actually role-played that, and we had the participants in the program actually play the role of being one of those people, and it gave them a new appreciation for what that's like. So we did a mock council meeting with a particular item that we put out there for them to wrestle with.
All right. Anyone else? Yes, Councilman Burns.
Actually, a budgetary question. I was just curious, what big items did you cut from the budget this year?
We cut a lot of little items from the budget this year. So we did an exhaustive line item by line item review, mm-hmm. of everything. And we looked for areas where we found some areas where we had money in the budget, where we hadn't spent money out of that area in a while. So those got zeroed out. We found some areas in the budget where we hadn't spent as much as was in the budget in an awfully long time, and it didn't appear we were going to anytime soon. So we cut those out. One area, for example, where we trimmed was on overtime, where we weren't spending up to that amount. We recognize, though, that we may have some big thing happen sometime soon, and we may go over our overtime budget as a result of something happening. We're going to have to lean more on our fund balance and in some other areas if that were to occur. But those events, at least historically, have only occurred maybe once every 10 years. So to keep that money in the budget year after year doesn't make as much sense. But there's more of a likelihood we'll be coming to you with budget amendments as a result of this budget because we've taken our margin down, but we've really scrutinized everything we do. So, Kelly, I don't know if there's anything in particular big that comes to mind, but there are a lot of smaller things.
Chief took out two new police vehicles and delayed some of that to help balance our budget. So that was a pretty big sacrifice from the police department.
Yep, which helped the general fund. Certainly.
Okay. So we're going to keep two older vehicles on the road for another year, 2 years. Is that the expectation?
Yeah, it's not an ideal scenario. We're not happy about it. They didn't come out easily. I mean, I shouldn't say the chief was resistant. He was great and very collaborative, but none of us wanted to do that. But
drive past him in the shop on my way home quite often.
Yeah,
so
no
I
doubt.
There's
yes.
a visit need to go.
Certainly the chief can comment on that.
So basically what they're saying, we're still have two vehicles per year that we are purchasing. We're trying to get to the model where we're getting three vehicles per year because our cars are just getting older and we're spending more on repairs. But figuring out the budget, I mean, that's one area we can wait to make it work. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what we decided on.
Okay. Thank you.
I would also say a lot of the new stuff got scrapped. So there were things that we wanted to do. We have needs in the city. One need is we really need a city clerk for a variety of reasons, including records requests, including just sort of managing the flow of council discourse and council committees and a whole variety of things. But we just can't get there with this budget. We just could not fund that. So that came out right away. There was some money for human resources for professional services support, and we reduced that number significantly. We used it for class and compensation study this year, which we significantly underfunded, but we cut that back as an ongoing expense. So we've got less room to maneuver going forward, but these were all areas where we just had to find money, so we went looking for it.
Fire department was greatly impacted by it, too. Greatly in need of staff and other equipment, and that's just not going to happen because we just don't have any kind of money to spend on it. So all the departments are greatly impacted, and I want to extend a special thanks to all the departments because, as Charlie was saying, we went line item by line item, and, you know, it's hard to let go of something knowing that there's a high probability you're going to need it, but, yeah. So if that's it for, do you have, okay, Councilman Allen, go ahead.
I had one thing, and, sure. And this is, I'm kind of all over the place on this, but the property tax, city and property tax, is just pretty much a formality, I think. It's more of a policy statement that we've always followed and not gone ahead with the 1% or the impact. Implicit price deflector. I think people have no problems paying user fees, construction fees, but the idea of a city property tax, they've been weaned of it for a long time. And it's, what, $12,000 or something, and then $29,000 in exemptions. I just think it's a policy that seniors in particular can live with, and where they're not saying my property taxes for the city are going up and going up, even though they're banked. It doesn't mean a hill of beans, and you're throwing a lot of goodwill out to people, I think, on that, instead of browbeating them over the head with another tax. So. Anyway, thanks for my two minutes.
All right. Thank you. Councilman Owen?
Yes. I agree with Glenn. I think we take this property tax too lightly. I mean, we expect it every year. And you say 1%, 2%, but over 5 years, you know, that adds up to 6 or 7%. And a lot of these people are just barely hanging on. You don't realize how tough it is on some of these people. I mean, a few dollars, but it's not going to change your budget if that don't pass on $12,000 or whatever. You're going to do what you got to do anyway without this. But you just the city. For some reason or another, they want more and more. But you never hear them talk about cutting or we're going to cut this or cut that to save the taxpayers a few dollars. So I'm very sympathetic to the taxpayers because I am one. I'm with the older generation that don't have a lot of income, and it's tough. But you people don't realize how tough it is out there. And with this recession coming up, it's getting worse and worse and worse. And it's hard on people. So I'm not in favor of taxes. I know some taxes are necessary to keep the city going, but this 1% is not going to keep the city going, and it's not going to change anything. If it don't pass. So I'm thinking about the people I represent right now. And
It hurts. I mean, if I say, well, we'll take 2% of your salaries and we'll balance the budget, you wouldn't like that very well. So what I'm saying is I don't think we need this 1% tax. We'll survive without it. That's all I've got to say.
Okay. Anyone else? Well, we're talking the budget, but the property tax came up. Okay, if there is nothing else regarding the budget, I am going to close this particular public hearing. I mean, there's no action that needs to be taken at this point. And we'll move on to the second public hearing, which is now the property tax 2023 budget levy. And it's ordinance number 2024-22. Again, it's a first read. No action to be taken. And Kelly, I guess this is you.
Yes, thank you. Mark pointed out, and I have a couple places in here, that the new position, the 50-50, is parks and storm water. So just wanted to make that clarification. We'll get that updated. But related to property tax, just wanted to give a quick background and some information up here on the slide. The implicit price indicator, IPD, that's just a measurement of inflation along with CPI, and it's calculated by the Washington State Department of Revenue, and we discussed it previously when talking about property tax that the city can increase property tax a total of 1%, but just a little more nuance, it's 1% or the IPD, whichever is lesser. So in times when inflation does not meet that 1%, we are not able to increase property tax by 1%. So just wanted to give a little bit of context to that. And on the next slide, again, just summarizing some of the things we already talked about, how property tax is calculated. It's the prior year, and the exemptions here are the low-income senior community who has applied with the county for exemptions, so their property tax is lesser. And then the 1% or IPD, and then any new construction is how property tax is calculated. So that's just a quick summary. On the next slide, we're going to talk about that orange number, the 1%. So I realized looking at it now, the orange over there is really hard to see, but it's a little bit easier to see in the packet. The top blue line there, that is the Seattle CPI. So our region may be a little bit less, but it goes pretty well in line with the CPI, and again, a measurement of inflation. The next middle line there, the gray line, that's that IPD that's used in relation to property tax. And then the bottom line chart is just showing the inflation of our property tax, whether the city has chosen to take the 1%. You can see from 2019 to 2009 to 2019, the city has elected not to take the 1%. You can then see that big spike in 2020. That is Proposition 1. We went out for a levy lid lift to fund the police department and additional officers. You can see that raise up. Ideally, we would see our revenues increase in line with inflation, with our expenditures increasing. You can see that hasn't been the case. We had a good bump with the Proposition 1. However, that did come with mirrored expenditures. So the additional money we got in for that, we spent. It wasn't it wasn't too much impacted inflation. So ideally, again, we would be closer to trending with CPI or the IPD. And my recommendation for the city to not necessarily add additional services or get more is just to maintain our level of service and keep providing our citizens is to keep as close as we can to inflation. Doing 1% property tax will never keep up with inflation, but it is in the right direction. It is a positive move in the right direction to sustain our services. On the next slide, this just goes over the funds that are primarily funded by property tax. So we have a lot of funds and services in our city. These five items are the primary things funded. The general fund, which encompasses a lot of items, police, fire, administrative services, engineering, a lot. It includes a lot of things, as well as parks, cemetery, streets, and the library are all funded by property tax. This chart, and there's more detail on the next slide, but this chart just goes over the percentage of each of those funds that is supported by property tax. And you can see from 2015 to 2019, that's slowly declining. It gets a little boost from Proposition 1, and then it's slowly declining again. You can see it's starting to go up a little bit, but that's because of our 2023-2024 budget, with the hopes of passing the 1% property tax increase. On the next slide, this is probably a little too much detail to see, a little too small, but it's just more detail. So some people like to see it in charts. Some people like to see it in tables. So this is just all the detail, how those numbers were calculated. And at the bottom, you can see the percentages. Finally, on the next slide is our property tax recommendations. And these are just excerpts from what was included in the packet. We recommend for 2023 taking the bank capacity from not doing the 1% in 2022 and the 1%. And you can see the change, what it would be if we don't take it versus what if we do make the change. We do have to have this completed by the end of November to submit to Skagit County Assessor's Office. The 2024, we again recommend the 1% increase, but we don't need to decide on that today. That doesn't need to go to Skagit County until next November. So we have some time to think about that. Today, really want to get your thoughts on our recommendations for 2023. And did you have something to add, Charlie?
I just wanted to add something real quick. So when we talk about the 1%, we're talking about 1% levy growth. We're not talking about a 1% rate increase on individual properties in town. In fact, last year we had enough new construction, which is what happens often in growing communities, where even had we taken the 1% increase in our levy, people's effective property tax rate, their actual percentage of property tax they pay to the city, would have gone down. And that's not uncommon. That happens in a lot of places that are growing. We don't know that that would happen again in 23 and 24, but I just wanted to be really clear. We're not layering 1% on 1% on 1%. We're simply saying the city's levy, the amount of money we're able to collect in the property tax, it's limited by state law. We've limited it beyond that by not looking at 1% growth to 0%. And that's why that graph was so flat that Kelly showed. We're simply looking at allowing it to grow a little bit. It doesn't even come close to inflation, but just a little bit to try to keep up with expenses. If the council is not supportive of the 1% that we've recommended, we will have to remove that money from the budget as well. So I just wanted to point that out, just to be clear.
I have a question. So the last go-round, there's a bank capacity of 1%. If that does not go through, that then goes away, or are you continuing, is the city continuing to bank that additional 1% and bringing it forward again in 2024?
You can, and I'd have to check in with the county. The county has been great answering all our questions on that. I believe the council has to approve it being banked. So when it says banked, you can never get back what you would have gotten in, like, we didn't accept the 1%, or actually, it was the IPD last time. We didn't accept that, so we're never going to get back that portion of money for 2022. We'll never see that money. But you can, the bank is basically moving forward as if, relatively close to as if you had taken it. So you'll never get it back from prior years, but you can use it moving forward. Unfortunately, the property tax calculations are, they seem straightforward, but they're kind of complex. So if you don't take the 1% in 2023, the about $30,000, you'll never get that $30,000 back. You have the option to then add it in 2024 if you choose to bank it.
So the banked 2022 would not continue to bank. I guess what my question is this was...
You can bank multiple years.
So then at some year down the future, somebody, a council could come in and then vote it in, and then the constituents are then hit with, you know, basically 1%, 1%. I mean, it's just layering it on top of each other. So in theory, you're looking at a 3%, you know, a 2% or a 3%. It's not just a 1 and 1. Is that correct?
Yes. There is a little bit more complexity to the calculation, but yes, in essence, you could, you would not step people up. Like our goal would be to slowly increase property taxes, to meet the city needs and not go into what happened in 2020 with really like going up a cliff, right? But yes, that could happen if it was banked for multiple years.
The other thing you lose by not taking it on a regular basis is compounding over time. So you grow by 1%, and then the next year you have a chance to do another 1% and another, but the base is growing gradually. So you lose that.
Right.
And you don't get that back.
No, I'm trying to understand that, but I'm also looking at the reality of hitting taxpayers with, you know, a banked plus a 1%, or a, you know, the reality of hitting at right now when you're going into recession and inflation as high as it is. I mean, every dollar counts. And I have people in my ward that are, they've shut down their internet because they can't afford it because they have property taxes that they have no control over how much these are increasing, right? Like mine went up significantly and I did absolutely nothing to my house. So these are things that are out of their control. And I realize that the city is also taking on, you know, it becomes more costly, right, too, as well, because things cost more to get things done. There's just a trickle down effect. I understand all of that. I just am struggling with the hitting people so hard right now with times are with what they are. I mean, people go to the grocery store and it's double, triple what they used to pay for the basics. And, you know, I met a person this weekend that couldn't leave their house because they couldn't afford the gas to go do anything until they got paid on Monday, Tuesday, just because things are so expensive and they had to choose between buying food or additional gas to go do what they needed to do. And that's just the hard reality of the people in our community right now. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam, still have more?
No, just
well. So I would like Kelly to finish her presentation. I'd like to follow the public hearing the way that it's supposed to be done, if that's okay. So if you can write your questions down and retain them, that would be fantastic. Is that okay? Yes, okay. Yes, absolutely, absolutely. You'll have lots of time to ask questions and do discussion, absolutely. Yeah. So, Kelly?
That was everything, okay. Madam Mayor.
All right, so thank you, Kelly. So right now I want to open this up to the public to give them opportunity to come forward and make any comment that they would like to wish. So is there anybody within the audience here who would like to make public comment on the property tax 2023 budget levy?
Philip Murray, 101 West Woodworth. I'm not sure how the property tax stuff works, but when your property value jumps up $35,000, you're getting property taxes off of that, is from what I understand. I'm not sure how it works, but somebody's getting that money. The taxes go up on that, you know. And then you want 1%. It's just ridiculous. People can't afford that. And you got people living on the streets out there, and you're going to make it even worse. You know, they can't afford the taxes and eating and gas and insurance. So, and you say, well, you can go online and get your meetings. Who can afford that? I haven't had cable TV or anything for about 10 years. So you need to cut back, and I appreciate it. And I like what you said. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else?
Tony Splane, 714 Sap Road. I am against this property tax increase also. There's many of us, 85 and 90 years old, that live exclusively on a Social Security check. We have zero chance of getting a raise. The government says, yeah, sure, we give you a raise. Then they take it all back for Medicare and stuff. So we wind up with maybe enough to buy a cup of coffee. But, for instance, I worked in my place. I bought it in the 50s to retire on it. Now I'm ready to retire, and I'm being forced to get rid of it because I can't afford to keep it now from taxes and everything else. And it isn't fair. The seniors need some sort of a break on this. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Anyone else? Okay, so I'm going to close it to the public, and I'm going to open it now to our council and Ms. Kesty. I'll start with you.
Thank you. You had mentioned a program that people could potentially sign up for. Could you talk a little bit more about that and how one could maybe look into that?
Yeah, there is a couple of criteria. I believe there's age, income. There's a couple other criteria as well, and I can send out the details on that. All the property tax information goes through Skagit County Assessor, and it would be done through the assessor.
So you would just go to the office then, or can you just call them and tell them about this program to see if you qualify?
Yeah, I'm not sure on the details. I know you could probably get an application from them in person. I'm not sure if they have things online. I assume that they do.
Okay.
But we can follow that up.
I'm wondering if there's a possibility that on our website we could list the information where they could go to gather the information that they may need and contact number for the assessor's office and whatnot to make it easier for the public. Thank you. Yes. Councilman Lavaca?
Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that if there's a way, regardless of which way this goes, if we can have some information on the website, is that a one-time application? I believe it is, but could you clarify if that application for property tax?
I can clarify. I don't know the answer right now, but I can get that clarification. Okay.
That would be good. Yeah, I do get that a lot with our my house taxes went up quite a bit just because the property value lifted. And I think everybody can understand that, but especially people that are on fixed incomes, you know, young and old alike. So, yeah. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Councilman Burns?
I don't think there's ever a good time to raise property taxes. There's always a reason why people don't want us to do it, and I understand that. There's also a point where how much fat is there to cut off? Eventually you're cutting to the bone when you're trying to cut the budget for the city. And it seems like there's a misunderstanding in part on the general public. I even had this misunderstanding myself before I was on the council as to how taxes are procured, where they go. We don't have income tax in Washington. So there's no money coming in from an additional revenue stream like the income tax for the city. The state collects a large part of what you're seeing coming out of your property taxes. That's not going into our coffers either. I don't know completely how that functions. Maybe Kelly could enlighten us on that portion. But what we're looking at on here appears to be everything that there is for the city to get from property taxes. There's no hidden amount that we're adding to it. So, Kelly, is there anything you can tell us to help people understand how it works with the state's property taxes going up a lot without us getting that large increase?
Different jurisdictions levy property tax, so different areas see it different. Even areas within Siege of Woolley are taxed a little bit different depending on how they fall under other jurisdictions. So a big driver of the total property tax any citizen pays in Siege of Woolley, A big one is the school district, so making sure our schools are fully funded, Skagit, PUD, if fire, potential fire districts, well, actually, all of Siege of Woolley would be under our fire district. There are other taxing jurisdictions that impact property tax. Siege of Woolley is only a small portion of the total property tax collected, and we don't have any control over the other portions of it. We are very collaborative with the other agencies, but ultimately we don't have control. There is a lid. You can't raise property taxes indefinitely. There is a lid for the maximum amount of property tax total that can be collected. But I do know that there are some really good resources available for understanding property tax even further that I'm happy to share out.
If there's any chance you could group that in with what Councilman Lavaca was talking about when you post things on the website, that would be wonderful.
Yeah. And I think our former finance director, Debbie Burton, is probably watching. She shot me a text just to say that the exemption isn't just a one time. It does require an annual verification of income, but I'll verify that as well as getting some additional information.
Thank you.
Councilman Lavaca. Councilman McGoffin.
Thank you. I was going. I just want to say thank you first to putting all this information together. I think it's really comprehensive. And I want to also acknowledge everyone that's given public comment and has spoken. I think it's really important to take that into consideration. Because it is hard right now. You know, you go to the store and milk costs a lot more, meat costs a lot more, taking your car costs a lot more for the gas. I think we have to acknowledge that. And we also need to acknowledge that those costs are what the city's also incurring. You know, when we go to fill up our fire trucks, our police cars, the gas has gone up for us as well. Everything's gone up. And, you know, the 1% is not hitting everyone's property tax for their house. That 1% is to grow the budget so that we can pay for these items that have gone up. And I think that for me, I misunderstood that my whole life until it was explained to me after the 10 years or so that we'd never rose property tax. When I came on, that was a major issue because we had dug ourselves a big hole. We had, you know, put the needs of not raising taxes because it's nice, it sounds good, and everyone's like, great, no tax. But at the end of the day, we are providing services, and those services don't come free. And they cost more every single year. So we're not raising the 1% to do new projects, new services. We're raising that 1% to provide the same service to our citizens. And I fully acknowledge the needs of the senior citizens. I have family that are in that same boat, and I know that it's hard, and I think that's why it's important to give them every tool. If they are exempt, you know, they should be having that information available so that they can follow that. But we have to think about the whole city, every citizen, and all the services that we need to supply for them and the ability to pay for those services. And, you know, it is compounding. If we don't do this and we build a city around, we don't ever raise your property tax, that's going to hurt us. If you do that 10, 12 years in a row, you know, inflation is going to bite you. And that's just the simple truth, that inflation takes from what you currently have and it devalues it. That's the way the dollar's worked. In years that there's no inflation or it's really low, I would totally understand not doing a property tax increase. But in a year like this where it is incredibly high, everything we have to pay for is more expensive. And I think it's our duty to make sure that we are solvent, that we can provide all of our services the way that our citizens expect them to be provided. And we have to consider that a 1% increase will help us maintain that at the expense of people have to pay a little bit more. The one part that I think I would deviate on is the banked 1%. I recognize that as council's decision not to raise taxes for that year. I would respect that from previous decisions, and I think, like Sarah, our councilwoman Diamond was saying, it's hard to hit someone with a banked capacity on top of the 1%. So I would be in favor of just 1%, but not the banked. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilman Ibaka?
Yeah. So it is one of those deals where I do understand that if we put ourselves in a big hole, and looking at how long we've gone without doing any taxes, what is the city going to look like in 2026? And if inflation continues to grow and our only tax increases are coming through a levy that has to go through, that's really kind of putting us in a hard position with, you know, services that are going to be needed at that time. I think we're already feeling the stretch right now, but we're feeling the stretch across the board, which makes it very difficult. I think with utilities, rate increases, levies needed for firefighters, the property taxes that are outside of the city's control, which is significant due to property value, it makes it difficult to make these decisions. But looking at the long haul is, I mean, I would almost want to see how much per house that is, because we're looking at $40,000 right now, $13,000 for this year if we did the 1% or something like that. It seems like it's a relatively small, but at least we're kind of break that chain of none, and that's kind of where I'm looking at it.
All right, thank you. Anyone else? Yes, go ahead, Councilman Owen.
I agree with my neighbor here. Things do go up, and prices go up. Cost of living goes up. But there's other taxes that's covering that, like our utility taxes are going up. You don't need the 1% property tax to cover that, because they're going to get it. You're going to get it covered. I mean, you're going to go up, or utilities are going up. And I still don't agree with the 1% property tax. And I can guarantee you, if you don't pass, nothing's going to change. Everything's going to work just fine. But it's one of those convenient things that you think you get every year. And so far in the past, we've passed that property tax. But I'm ready to put the halter on it and say, okay, that's enough. But everything is covered as far as inflation in the city and higher gas or fuel cost. That's covered in the utility rates. That's all I've got.
Okay. All right. Is that it? I have to say, this was a very thoughtful conversation and discussion, and I appreciate the council's thoughts, their information, and their opinions that they have shared. This is very good. At this time, I'm going to close the public hearing for the budget, the property taxes, 2023. And we will be readdressing this both at the next meeting on the 9th, and then on the 22nd. And so other questions that you may have, please feel free to contact the staff or Kelly. Kelly would probably be the best person for that. Contact Kelly so that you have a very clear understanding of how you want to move when it comes to the 22nd. We're asking for your vote. So a lot of thought, a lot of reading if you so choose, or whatever you need from us, please do ask. All right. Thank you. Okay. And I'm going to close the public hearing here. We're going to move on now to new business. And the first item up is the October 28th designated as honoring Skagit County's First Responders Day, Resolution 11082. And Charlie, I think you're going to take us through this.
Thank you, Mayor Johnson. Yeah, pretty straightforward. So there is a national designation for First Responders Day, and that was actually done in 2017, and that's October 28th. There's a countywide effort ongoing this year to name also October 28th as the same day for Skagit County. And the mayor and I and both chiefs had an opportunity to attend a great ceremony earlier this week down with the county commissioners, where they passed a resolution similar to the one that you see here, really honoring the first responders for the whole county. And agencies were there from across the county, and it was just a great event. Part of the ask, and this came from Sheriff McDermott, was to have the various cities in the county also look at designating the 28th as First Responders Day, Skagit County First Responders Day. And so that is the request of the council. If you're so inclined this evening, there's a resolution attached to the agenda memo that does that. There's no financial commitment for the city. It's simply a opportunity to recognize the great work that our folks as first responders do, and the others who serve our community and serve the region as well. So that's what it is this evening.
All right. Any questions or discussion? If not, I'm looking for a motion.
Madam Mayor, I'd like to make the motion to declare October 28th to honor first responders in Skagit County and Cedar Woolley.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Madam Mayor, I'll second that.
Thank you. So we have a motion by Councilman Burns and a second by Councilwoman Diamond designating October 28th as honoring Skagit County's First Responders Day. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you. I think that's well deserved. Moving on to item number 3, the fire hydrant maintenance interlocal agreement with Skagit County PUD. And again, Charlie and Frank, who's going to take this?
I'll take the lead and then turn it over to Frank to talk about the benefits for the fire department. Did a lot of writing last week, so my apologies for filling up your agenda here. We got a number of items, but this one has been in the works for a long time. You may recall, I reported out on this, I think, when I first got here within a few weeks. This was a conversation that we had started having with Skagit County PUD. There was actually a newspaper article about it. And what we ended up doing in negotiations with Skagit PUD was to, they wanted to study our hydrants. They wanted to actually do a full-on assessment of all of our hydrants to really understand what they were getting into if they were going to provide fire hydrant maintenance. And that's the question for the council. Do we want to enter into a contract for the PUD to take over fire hydrant maintenance, which is currently done now by our firefighters? It's a best practice to actually have the water utility maintain those because they're directly connected to the water system, and there's a lot of work that PUD ends up doing anyway for the things that we discover in the system, and the chief can certainly address that more. I'll talk a little bit more about the agreement itself. So they did an assessment of everything that we have out there. They determined there were a number of hydrants that needed work. Some of them needed replacement, and the total amount of that work was estimated at $35,000. That was a little while ago, and they're concerned that costs are going up for a lot of things. So this agreement has a cap of $50,000, and we would reopen the agreement if they sense they're going to hit that cap for any kind of upgrades and replacement costs for the hydrants themselves. This is just them up front getting the system ready for them to take it over. So that's the cost to the city. There's up to a $50,000 exposure. We're recommending using ARPA funds again for this. This is an opportunity for us, though, to avoid ongoing costs that are all the way into the future forever in doing this maintenance and saving a lot of hours. And I'll turn it over to the chief because he's much more expert on exactly what we do and how we do it and what it takes.
Yeah, for the past 28 years that I've been here, they've been hours. So we currently own almost 500 hydrants that we maintain each and every year. 500 hydrants, which we go out two-person crews each and every year. They flow them for a few minutes. They weed eat around them. They paint them. They check the valves. They check the pressure. They log that stuff in. And a lot of these folks, I mean, we're not the professionals on the water system like PUD is. So when you figure almost 500 hours of persons on a two-person crew, there's 1,000 hours of a year that we're averaging doing. And in this last year with being so short-staffed and having PUD take care of us, take care of all these hydrants for us this one year has been a saving grace. On top of that, with the amount of work that they've done over the years, we only found a few of those. They were expecting 60 to 100 of these hydrants being issues with some of the old village ports and some of the wooden lines that we have down on the south end of town that are still wrapped and that we've had issues with over the last few years. But this is a win-win for everybody, in my opinion. Crews are excited about it. They don't have to go out there in the rain or the baking sun to catch up on these on top of all their inspections and stuff. And we'll really save, I think, everybody in the long term. And we'll have the professionals that truly know this system, upkeeping them. They'll be on a schedule. All of the data that we need for our Washington State Surveys and Ratings Bureaus will be available to us. They keep an amazing record of data that we have login and passwords and stuff, too, that we can pull, bring all the new ones in. They'll have an online work order system we can utilize and maintain to get anything changed. And then going forward, they will keep all the hydrants to the specifications and fittings and stuff that we use for our rigs, too. So it's a great deal for us long-term and short-term, if you so choose.
Yeah, just to add a little bit of extra data to that, and the chief and I have had this conversation, the valuation of the staff time savings, which is estimated at 500 hours of fire department staff time per year, the valuation of that is $14,175 per year. So there's just that's really what the opportunity cost is of them doing that versus something else they could be doing, which is many things. The actual straight-up cost is between $2,500 and $5,000 per year. If you looked at just the straight-up cost of what we spend on this, it's about a 10-year payback if it's $5,000 a year, but it's about 3 years if you look at the staff time. And I didn't run the two together, but it's going to be less than 3 years, obviously. So we think it's a great deal. We're certainly recommending it to you. We think it's fair. There's upfront cost, but we happen to have these ARPA funds right now, so in a normal year, without that, it would be much harder to deal with the upfront cost. But it's fair they get a system they feel is ready to go, and we can rely on that system going forward to work for us for our first responders.
Okay. Are there any questions or comments by the council?
I'm just wondering, if we give this over to PUD, will they use this as a reason for possibly raising the rates going forward, like in the future, in the next couple of years? They'll say, we have to monitor all these, so we've got to raise the rates a little bit.
We could ask the PUD that question, but it's going to be a very minuscule part of their overall system and their overall costs. So it would be a pretty much a rounding error and kind of a rate analysis they would do. This is not going to drive their rate decisions. There are much bigger investments that I'm sure they have system-wide that would do that.
Sure. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Yes, Councilman Burns.
I'm sorry. You just piqued my interest. Did you say wooden lines?
Yes, sir. In fact, I think we have a chunk of one that we kept out back here that I think is still there. And they're truly wooden lines still in the south end of town that are wrapped in wire. And actually, in some places, the old ones we pulled out were also wrapped in asbestos. So. And some of those ones down there that we have pulled out in through construction and stuff were still operational and doing an amazing job. So get pretty interesting. But if you want to come out and check it out one day, I'll show you a chunk.
I
was surprised as well.
That's interesting. Okay, thank you.
Anyone else? So this is a first read. However, staff recommends approval when and if the council is ready. So would the council like to make a motion, or would you like to have this brought back to you?
Madam Mayor, I'll make a motion.
I'll second.
All right, thank you. So we have a motion by Councilwoman Diamond, second by Councilman McGoffin. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. All right, thank you, Council. Moving on to item 4 of our new business, amending the C.J. Woolley Municipal Code 5.04.030, the license fees and regulations related to the mobile vendors. This is Ordinance 2023-22. And Charlie, we're back to you.
Thank you, Mayor Johnson and Council. So this item and the next item are actually related. And I was hoping they wouldn't be when I started editing the code, but then we remembered that we just put in place the master fee schedule, which took some things out of the code that I was editing. So we had to create two action items. So I'll describe this first action item first, but just keep in mind, I think the main event that you all probably want to talk about is the actual license fee, which is in the resolution, which is the next item. But we've had a process on this. I talked with the, and my apologies for this taking a while. I know when we talk with council, there was a desire to try to get it done quickly, and we're right at the front of the tourism season, and it just got bogged down with other stuff. So we're getting it back to you now. One request we had from council was to meet with business owners in the community. So we made an attempt to do that. We put out word through the chamber. Unfortunately, we didn't have any businesses come, so we weren't able to get that feedback on what we're looking at here. The Business Development Committee with Councilmember Burns and Councilmember Allen present had an opportunity to talk about this, kind of where they wanted to go with the policy discussion on this, and they left it up to me largely to look at definitely decreasing the fee for mobile vendors, which we'll get into in the next item. But there was also a desire to look at putting some additional constraints on how mobile vendors can set up in the community. So I went ahead and provided some clarification through the code, and that is what I wanted to just briefly touch on. Fairly straightforward, but there was a discrepancy in the code that I discovered, and I included Richie Coleman, our virtual intern, who was online a little bit earlier. He wrote this initial memo that gave us a lot of the background on what's going on in the region and what also our fees look like. So we could think about two things as we got into setting these fees, and I'll talk about that more in a little bit, but it was equity within C.J. Woolley as well as equity within the region and what made the most sense. But for the actual regulations on how the vendors set up, which is what's left in this section of the code, one thing that was asked for is if a mobile vendor serves food, that we have some kind of restriction on them not being able to set up in front of an existing restaurant, at least without consent from that restaurant. So I put in here a 100-foot restriction, which is consistent with, I think, one other community that we had on our list. And I can't remember if it was Anacortes or Burlington. So that's in there, and that's in addition to our code. The discrepancy in the code was one part of the code talked about vehicles on public streets and how they would operate. And most of the cities in the area either have significant restrictions on mobile vendors operating on public streets or don't allow it at all. Mount Vernon, for example, pretty sure does not allow it at all, but they have very specific areas where mobile vendors can get permits to set up on public land in the city. And we don't necessarily have great public land for where we would do that. But the way this code was written, I believe the intent was, and it actually gave an example of an ice cream truck. The intent essentially was for a mobile vendor who's on the move to be able to stop very briefly, do business, and then continue on. And there, that section of the code talked about it being a 10-minute limit, and then another section of the code talked about it being an hour limit. And I had a chance to talk with a mobile vendor who's very interested in doing business in the community who just said an hour is such a short time, there's no way they would set up. They would need, like, a day would be a better limit for them if they wanted to set up on public streets. That, if the council wants to go into that discussion at some point, is a much bigger discussion, I think, with a lot of unintended consequences we would need to think through. Because any public streets mean mobile vendor could show up anywhere with the exception of in front of another restaurant and do business for a while. So I'm not recommending that. I think the intent of the way this was written was 10 minutes. So I went ahead and clarified the 1 hour to 10 minutes. So it says 10 minutes twice now in the code. It's very clear that we meant 10 minutes on public streets. And then we clarified do not set up in front of another restaurant without getting their permission. and even beside them on private property. Really, the focus here is on private property, and that's where we are with the fee coming down in the next item. That's really where we're going to see our activity in the community, besides festivals, which are a bit of a separate topic covered in the code as well. So that's what's in this code change. Really, the two main things: setting the time limit clearly, really clearly, for public streets, and also putting in that provision so that there has to be consent from an adjoining restaurant that's less than 100 feet away if somebody's going to set up on private property.
Yes, questions or comments?
I'm sorry, then I'm a bit confused. So if they got, if they asked the owner of the property, the restaurant, but they could only be there for 10 minutes regardless?
So if they're on a public street, they could only be there for 10 minutes regardless. But if they're on private property, let's say next to a restaurant, so there's a vacant lot next to a restaurant, or a business next to a restaurant says, please come here and serve our employees. If they're within 100 feet of that restaurant, they do have to get permission from the restaurant. And the goal, I believe, of the committee is to avoid competition that would be unnecessary, because on private property, a mobile vendor could come every day if they wanted to, the way our code works. And so that could be, that could create a different type of competition than what we have currently.
And for the vendors that are selling, like, clothing or, you know, things like that, is that the same restriction for them as well?
We did not apply that the way we've written this. We certainly could. Right now, we got very specific about food and restaurants, but we could certainly open that to other things.
Oh, I wasn't trying to make it harder for them. I was just trying to make sure that they would be able to park somewhere and be able.
Are you thinking the festivals that we have here, where we do have different vendors come in and in the street and they set up? Is that what you're thinking of?
Well, I can just think of a couple of vendors that have these mobile boutiques, and I didn't know if that was going to be restricted to 10 minutes or an hour as well, if they wanted to pop up a shop somewhere really quickly or something.
Mobile vendors are restricted to 10 minutes on public streets, the way the code was written. It was before, it was either 10 minutes or an hour, depending upon which one you thought was in charge. But, yeah, it still is 10 minutes. But where you would see that kind of, I think, mobile vendor might be on private property, maybe adjoining another business where they wanted to co-locate. And as long as they're working together on that and they have permission to be on that private property, that's not a problem.
Okay. Yes, Councilman McGoffin.
I just had a question on the shaved ice truck during the summertime. Is that on public property, the parking spots right there? Because it seems like they're there. I like going there. I'm not trying to bash on them, but I'm just curious how that fits into this rule, because it seems like they're parked the whole day.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the shaved ice truck, but if it's parked on public property, like in the right-of-way or in public parking space, then it, according to this, would be limited to 10 minutes. I mean, it's possible we just haven't enforced it. We haven't received any complaints or really noticed that.
I think part of that, like, for example, that one is generally at the farmer's market on Wednesdays, and it takes up a couple public parking spaces. However, people are very happy to see this truck there serving them. So I think it's just one of those clarifications.
Yeah, but I will double check on that, but I believe they'd fall under the farmer's market permit, okay, which would be more of a special event permit,
okay,
and that would
makes
allow
sense.
It. Yes.
Anyone else? If not, this is the first read. It sounds like there still needs some questions to be answered. So
I'm sorry, I have one more question. So if it then, like, say one of the businesses sells, I'm just like beer, and they wanted a food truck to come up, it's okay for them to stay longer than 10 minutes because they've gotten permission and it can be like a special request or something?
Yeah, as long as the truck pulls up on private property.
Okay.
Yeah. So out of the right of way, off the city. So off the city public parking spaces and off the street.
Oh. Right. So, like, if somebody were to roll into the back of Local 20 where they can roll in there, they could have food on site for an event or their own private, should that, so long as that mobile vendor is up to date with the city.
But you wouldn't be able to do that unless you had that extra space then.
Correct, because you can't do it on public property. Space. Just like the people in town probably wouldn't want somebody to pull up in their front,
right.
In their front yard.
Okay.
I think the 10 minutes is to avoid situations like that where we could have people, in the middle of Ferry Street or State Street and just kind of put up shop.
Okay.
I believe that was the intent of the way it was written. Yeah.
Okay, so we will bring this back. So thank you. Moving on then to item 5, amending the master fee schedule, and this is resolution 110622. Charlie.
Okay, so now to amend the master fee schedule, which isn't amending a bunch of different fees, just one specific fee, which is related to mobile vendors at this point because we've put them all in one place. This is where I'm recommending we take the mobile vendor annual license fee from $1,000 a year, which our analysis that Richie did definitely showed it was way out of bounds with what's going on in the region, and bring that down to $75. That's my recommendation. And the reason, the way I came to that, there were several things I looked at, but one was looking at the region and how we fit into the region as a whole. And you can look at $40 in Anacortes for a similar kind of permit, or between $50 and $100 in Burlington. And then also looking at our own fees. And for our own fees, we had some businesses that were more ongoing. I believe at like $135. It's in, my apologies, but it's in the, I don't think I put the memo in here twice. But we had some that were about twice that, but they were more ongoing than a mobile vendor is going to be. A mobile vendor is likely to come and go throughout the year. But if you have a pawnbroker or something like that, that's likely to be more permanent in town. So I was trying to kind of balance the relative impact on staff and everything for processing permits and looking at issues that may arise with these businesses. So that's how I came to the $75. And certainly that's flexible. And council can debate that as much as you'd like, but that's where I landed initially.
Okay. Go ahead, Councilman Lavaca.
I'm really excited about the direction that's going, for sure, because I think it's going to add more to our parks community, and it's going to add more to our community as far as a bit of taste of, you know, various things. So I think $75 sounds pretty reasonable too. I was pretty surprised at how low that was. I was thinking it would probably be $250, but that I think incentivizes people to also come to more festivals. So I would be in favor of that myself.
Yes, Councilman Burns.
As Charlie said, during the meeting, we kind of looked at other cities in the area and just kind of averaged it out, I think, is where he hit that 75. It really made sense to just kind of sit in the middle on it. Some people made it more complex than it needs to be, went off of how much money they planned on making and the time, and why make the city staff go through that when you just make a fixed number? I think that in the future it might be nice to consider something that I think that maybe Councilmember Kesty was thinking of, maybe a designated parking spaces somewhere in the city that we allow mobile vendors, but maybe we let a year go and see how this goes, see if people actually have interest in coming. Hopefully they will take us up on the lower price and start doing business here as well, and that'll fill a need in some of the other areas that aren't getting the service.
Councilman McGovern, do you have?
The 75 number sounds good to me too.
All right. So this is the first read, and again, staff recommends approving the attached resolution if and when the council is prepared to act. Is there a motion, or do you want this brought back?
I'll make a motion to approve this master fee scheduling resolution.
All right. Thank you.
I'll second.
Thank you. So we have a motion by Councilman Lavaca and a second by Councilman McGoffin to amend the Master Fee Schedule Resolution 110622. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And opposed, same sign. All right. Thank you. We do have one more item tonight, and that is the executive session. This is RCW 42301101B. It's regarding the purchase of property, and we should be there. Mr. What do you say, Mark? About 15 minutes? 10 minutes? 10 minutes. All right, perfect. So we'll be back in 10 minutes.
Thank you.
Say subject to, you're buying property, subject to this. And that's it. No. They can't do that. They purchase it and then, like the iron skillet. Nobody wanted that sold and gone. Ridiculous.
I've lived in foreign countries that don't allow this sort of crap to happen to the seniors. But not in this country. If you're not a millionaire, you might just as well go move somewhere else.
They said about 10 minutes buying property. You don't know what it is, why they need it or anything. And who they're buying it from, nothing.
No, it's just like there, I talked to some of them before. The people want that. And I said, there's a park by my house that I take care of because you people don't even know the damn thing is there.
You know how many city vehicles I see go on stopping at the stores and restaurants and stuff? I'm sorry, bring your own lunch, like I had to do. Or if you're going to go out for lunch, you take your own car. That fuel is just going to huge money.
Some consoles are going to stop to and taking their cars home.
Yeah.
Maybe another city car or something.
Yeah, they all go. All the police cars go out.
They don't include with the police chief. They take his. But they don't have the rest of the city employees. They use their own car.
The city has new everything now.
Yeah.
Everything's new. This is probably the oldest thing they have in this office of treatment plant. A new fire truck, million plus.
Well, that's goddamn state law. I ran into that with my antique truck. Anyway, I was up at the tire shop. And Skip and Linda had one from tire. I was up there getting my flat fixed. Say, you'll come and see America. But I was on the console then. And I said, what are you guys doing up here? Well, we have to put new tires on the front. And I said, what's the matter with these?
Yeah.
They're over 10 years old, and I'm going to stay long enough to take them off.
Yeah.
So anyway, you know, they were 10 under 20s. So I said, well, I need no tires on my Mac. But years from now, they're good tires. So
yeah.
You don't kick the tires.
I'm sorry, but with the fire stuff, as far as I'm concerned, okay, so your house burns down. The millions that we spend on fire, the fire department and the labor and everything, and the firemen's and everything, you buy the person a brand new house.
And then
you have insurance. It's like, well, they come and put it out, but it's ruined. Now you got to demolish it, cost too much. Let's earn.
A lot of that stuff, you know, they, when I was in consult, of course, they talked about breathing off words. But a lot of that's a state mandate. Yeah. Foods, you've got to do
the government tells them.
Because the lunch and Olympia, don't, they're so far out of touch with what goes on in the state anyway, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Anything that comes in, lobbyists that comes in there, they'll pass a damn law if they're going to do it or not. There's a lot of that stuff that's a state mandate. But just like the pickets, damn big group are not going to come to over the pickets. I said, well, what's the matter with yours? Well, it's a war out. And I said, what do you mean?
They only go around town.
I want to know how much money my husband makes. Not a damn one of them had over 80,000 miles. And I said, you're telling me it's a war out.
It needs new brakes. And that, well, that's war out.
Yeah. The ashtray is dirty. My over 100,000 miles, and I'm still going strong. What's the matter with
me? And now they get 300,000 out of the engine.
Yeah. And then mine did crap out. Then I shut my mouth from the $800 deal. Mm-hmm. They put antifreeze in, and radiator full of oil. Damn oil heater transmission crap down.
There you come.
It's in the radiator.
All right. It is 7:41. We are back from executive session, and no action was taken. At this point, there is nothing more unless there's something for the good of the order. All right. Council members, thank you very much. Good meeting. We are adjourned.